This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, September 24th, 2021. And today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Swink. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in New York before I head up to Boston. Later today, Red Sox-Yankees on ESPN tonight. Red Sox-Yankees on ESPN on Sunday night. A big series, obviously, between those teams. Yesterday, a big day for the Chicago White Sox, who held a big lead throughout the summer in the American League Central, and they finished it off yesterday.
Here's the 1-2. Swing and a miss! Sox win the division! They are the American League Central champions! A few hugs, but it's pretty low-key right now on the field, and a lot of handshakes and hugs in the dugout.
Glenn Casper on ESPN 1000. Now, yesterday, Chris Bassitt came back for the Oakland Athletics, whose playoff hopes are waning. They are fading. He looked great, but the Mariners would come back.
Here's a 3-2 to Haniger. Pitch swung on and drilled deep to right. Backing up Pinder on the track, reaching up over the fence. And that baby's gone. We got a tied ball game. Mitch Haniger with a home run ties it up as 35th. RBI number 85, and the Mariners keep on battling back, and they've done it again. 2-2 pitch, swung on, yank down the line. Ooh. Stay fair, big boy. He did! A two-run homer by Luis Torrens. Pinch hitting, and the Mariners have a 6-4 lead. LT off the bench, his 15th home run, and the Mariners have battled all the way back.
From 710 ESPN Seattle, Mariners win 6-5. The Blue Jays, in the midst of that wild card race, face the Minnesota Twins, a team they're supposed to beat. Game one of a four-game series for Toronto against the Twins, and it didn't go well.
Changeup hit high in the air, right field. This ball might have a chance. Get up. Gone. A three-run homer for Nick Gordon, and the Twins now lead 6-2.
On their way to a 7-2 win. That sound from Dan Gladden of Treasure Island Baseball Network. The two worst teams in baseball announced they're retaining their managers for next year. Brandon Hyde will go back to being the Baltimore manager in 2022. Arizona bringing back Torey Lovullo for 2022 as well. In the National League races, the Phillies were down big, 6-0 to Pittsburgh, but they came all the way back.
Swung on, hit well, left field, going back Alford to the track. It's going to be gone. It cleared. Ronnie Torres has put the Phillies on top. He just snuck it over that left field wall. A pinch hit, three-run home run for Ronald Torres, and the Phillies have an 8-6 lead.
Now from Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WIP, they would win 12-6, so 12 unanswered runs for the Phillies after falling behind by 6-0. The team that the Phillies are chasing, the Atlanta Braves, face the Diamondbacks. Final game of that series, and it didn't go well for Atlanta.
Shot to center. Heredia back. Over his head. Up against the wall. Calhoun turns third. He's coming to the plate. There will be no throw. He scores. Diamondbacks slated on an RBI double by Varsho. They're on top 5-4.
Arizona wins 6-4. That from Arizona Sports 98.7 FM. At the end of the day, the Braves lead over the Phillies at two games. In the National League West, the Dodgers were in Colorado. They trailed going to the top of the ninth inning, tied the score, and then in the top of the 10th inning, this is what happened.
Max Muncy leading it off. And a fly ball to center field. It's going to be a long run back, way back, and it is gone! A home run! Max Muncy! With his 35th home run of the year. And the Dodgers have a two-run lead. It is now 7-5.
Charlie Steiner, AM 570, LA Sports. The Padres and the Giants. San Francisco starting the day with a two-game lead over the Dodgers. But in the 10th inning, Padres walked it off.
Here's the pitch from Leon. Victor swings, ground ball up the middle, diving stop, La Stella coming home, no chance. Profar scores and the Padres win it. Victor Caratini with a walk-off infield single in the bottom of the 10th inning. And the Padres' efforts against the Giants finally rewarded. They win this game 7-6.
97.3 The Fan. And the hottest team in baseball, the St. Louis Cardinals, carried an 11-game winning streak into their series finale against the Brewers on Thursday. They fell behind big, 5-0. And then what a comeback by St. Louis.
A 2-2 pitch to Goldschmidt is hit high and deep to left field. I think he got it. I think he got it. You bet he did. A two-run home run for Paul Goldschmidt. And this game is tied at 5.
That from the Cardinals radio network, St. Louis would add on 3 more runs. And then in the bottom of the ninth inning, this is what it sounded like.
Swing and a miss. That's a Redbird winner and a sweep in Milwaukee. The Cardinals run onto the field. They shake hands after sweeping the Brewers and winning the Cardinals' 12th straight game.
They are rolling. We're going to be talking about that with Carl Ravitch coming up. Taylor, what do you got?
Buster, you mentioned Sunday Night Baseball. I will mention the baseball games on ESPN Radio this weekend. Yankees Sox Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in then, and also Sunday, if you're not watching on television, you can listen on the radio starting at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We've got In the Crease, ESPN's newest podcast. That's an NHL show hosted by Linda Cohn and Emily Kaplan. You've got Monday Morning, Look Out for Organized Chaos from Bart Scott and Rex Ryan, and please listen to the ESPN College Football Podcast as you get ready for week 4 of the college football season.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Carl Ravitch, play-by-play man for ESPN, host of Baseball Tonight. Rabbit, where's the Rabbit Train going today?
Train pulling out of the station a little before 11:30 this morning. Destination Fenway Park this evening for the opener of the Red Sox-Yankees. We're all excited about the series. We're all excited about being at Fenway Park. Eduardo Perez and I will be there. And this has, you know, this has the feel of all recent more important Red Sox-Yankees series. And it's been a little while. You know, you're thinking about Aaron Boone's homer, and you're thinking about 04, and you're thinking about 05 and the great race they had then. So we're really excited. We got to try to use the train to blow the elements out. Could be some wet weather up there this afternoon and this evening.
Yeah, we've got the Red Sox and Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball. I did a bunch of radio hits yesterday. I'm sure you have too. And I get asked the question all the time. Okay, who's going to come out of the American League East? Which teams are going to come out in the wild card race? We've been watching these teams all year, Carl, go up and down. The Red Sox in first place and collapsing and then coming back, and the Yankees doing the same thing. The Blue Jays streaking and then losing to the Minnesota Twins last night. And my answer has been, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. You have a strong feeling about any of these, which two teams are coming out of this?
Crystal ball is very foggy. I think the Red Sox get in. I think their schedule favors them. Look, the Yankees, you know, control their fate, if you will. They play the two teams they have to beat. They play the Red Sox, they play the Blue Jays, and then they play the Rays. And I don't know what the Rays, you know, state of mind is going to be. I think one thing I've kind of concluded as we head down the stretch, we talk all about strength of schedule, Buster, and the idea that, well, you're supposed to beat that team. You should beat that team, which it always rubbed me the wrong way. I couldn't quite figure out why. And other than, you're playing a professional team, you're playing major leaguers. I've kind of landed on the idea that the teams that you most want to play down the stretch are not the ones that have been out of it basically for months, because they're used to playing this type of baseball. They figured it out. They're in a place where these games have meant the same for a long time. You play a team that was in the race that has seemingly fallen out of it, and they go through this sort of defeated, deflated period where you're like, oh, my God. And the Mets were the most recent example of it against the Red Sox. You realize they were fighting for a long time and have come to the conclusion, we're out. And when you come to that conclusion, there is a natural letdown. We saw the letdown during this recent series. They were awful. And they were not awful because they played this way the whole year. They were awful because they realized we're done. We're dead. And you could see that. So to me, there is the difference between those teams and teams like the Royals and the Pirates and the Orioles. They're tough because they've been playing the same level, caliber, quality all season. It hasn't been good enough to get into a playoff position, but it's good enough to beat these guys on any given day. And you're looking at a team or teams that have been in it and now fallen out of it. That's a little different for me. So I'm not sure what the state of mind is going to be for the Rays when the Yankees play them. I know they're obviously in the playoffs. Are they saving guys? You know, integrity of the game says, well, we got to play everybody and we got to try hard. I don't know if that's going to happen. So the Red Sox get in, and I agree. The other two, I don't know the answer, Blue Jays or Yankees. I have no idea.
I think you're right about the Mets, by the way. It looked like watching those two games, like they already had their bags packed. You know, they were like college kids ready for spring break.
100%. No, they really were. They're in a bad place. But you know, now look, the Padres could end up in a bad place. The Reds could end up in a mentally bad place. I think the Phillies will play important games here the rest of the way. But, you know, there are those teams, maybe the A's. There seems to be a lot of pride there. But again, you got to recognize that you take that knockout blow and there is going to be a natural kind of letdown. And then maybe you puff your chest out and try to finish strong. But the Mets showed that natural letdown.
And we should mention the Mariners kind of hovering, you know, a couple games behind the group of teams, and we can't completely forget about them. I do think Oakland now it's going to be a tough road for them to come back. Let's give it up. Golf clap for the Chicago White Sox. They took care of business. I think everybody expected that they would probably win the American League Central this year, and they did in a walk. How dangerous are they on a scale of 1 to 10 for you going to be in the playoffs?
It would really depend on their pitching. I think they'll score. The offense is really dynamic and terrific. 7. They can play at a 10. They can sometimes play at a 5. So I'd say somewhere right in between 7, 7.5. There was a period this year where I would look at them like I had the Rays and the Astros. I thought they were all on the same level. I think they have fallen a little bit. Rodon's last start wasn't truly inspiring. But they certainly have the ability. That's for dang sure to be as good as anybody in the league. But I put them at a 7 right now.
We have talked a lot about how the Dodgers trade for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner might be the best trade deadline trade ever in terms of the impact. You know what those two guys have done for the Dodgers, and I think we'd have to put at the other end of the scale the White Sox trade for Craig Kimbrell. Because I know I thought at the time they got him, boy, you know, an established all-star reliever, perhaps a future Hall of Famer, joining a bullpen, which was already good, Liam Hendricks. And quite frankly, Craig Kimbrell has not been what they thought that they were getting. 20 games, 19 innings, 5.68 ERA, 8 walks and 30 strikeouts. And I, Carl, the whole time I've wondered, because I've, you know, you and I have talked to players, close guys who pitched the ninth inning. They just, if they're put into a role where they're not standing at the edge of the plank with an opportunity to get a save, they're just not the same. Craig Kimbrel now has allowed runs in 3 of his last 4 outings to push that ERA close to 6. What do you think about him?
Right. Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of some of the teams that Terry Francona had when he was in Boston, and you looked at the lineup and you said, okay, Crawford and Carl Crawford was great. And yet Joe Maddon had said, you know, be careful here. There's some holes. And I remember interviewing Tito before a season started and saying, how do you line this group up? And he kind of, you know, he chuckled typical Francona fashion, laughed, said, I pick them out of a hat because they were so good and they didn't win. When Kimbrel joined Hendricks, sure, you know, in a vacuum individually, they're both incredible. The bullpen has names that I do think in, you know, in the next couple of years are going to be the best, most dominant bullpen maybe ever created with Crochet and Kopech, and they're fantastic. But that idea of we're taking a closer and one of them is going to pitch, you know, the eighth inning or the high leverage. It didn't work. It could have. It didn't. So yeah, I would put it on the other end, but I'm not necessarily sure. I don't know. I blame the individual, even though it's the individual who's getting the ball and going out there on the mound. I just fall back on. I remember the Red Sox had such a dynamic offense and a lineup that didn't work because there was almost too much of a good thing. And it sounds counterintuitive, but in a lot of ways, I'm not shocked. And one of the things we hear all the time about pitchers and roles defined, they like it. They're creatures of habit. They want to know that when the phone rings in the seventh inning, that's for me. When it rings in the eighth inning, that's for me. And it rings in the ninth inning, I know I'm going in. We kind of blew that up. And I think that's, you know, I think that's partly to blame. Although I don't blame them for trying. I mean, it's a heck of a roster in a bullpen with those names, isn't it?
Oh, goodness. You're 100% right in terms of the arms and, you know, in terms of the resumes and what they've done recently. I am going to be curious once the postseason starts if Kimbrel, and look, reliever, you know how relievers go. I mean, Aroldis Chapman 3 weeks ago was considered to be a huge disaster.
Of course.
Guess what now? Everyone's like, oh, yeah. The old Aroldis is back. Kimbrel could go out in the last 10 days, have 3 great outings and be all primed up and ready to go in the postseason. But if that doesn't happen, I am going to be curious to see how he's used by Tony La Russa in the postseason. Give me some thoughts on the Cardinals, who, what a crazy comeback win yesterday against the Milwaukee Brewers. They just keep rolling.
Yeah, down a half dozen, and Goldschmidt goes yard twice, and Wainwright, who's been so good, doesn't have a good game, which will again now lead it. But the Cardinals have good news all around. They keep winning. They're getting Flaherty back, which is an enormous deal for them and could be a game changer. I'm shocked. Eduardo, Tim, and I have done enough Cardinals games to look at them and think there's no chance when we were doing their games they were making the playoffs. Zero chance. They had bullpen arms coming in and hitting players consistently, walking guys. Mike Schilt was driven crazy. And we had so many conversations with the poor guy about the unpredictability of their bullpen, and he doesn't know what he's getting. And look, these guys are professionals. We got to trust them to throw strikes, and they couldn't throw strikes. It's an amazing thing, and it'll be fascinating to see once this once the wild card game is played. You know, they're going to play the Dodgers or Giants, you know, I used to think there was going to be a Dodger Giant first round division series because the wild card winner is going to be one of those two teams, and then they're going to face the West winner. I don't know. How do you pick against a team that's won 12 in a row, and who knows how it ends as they finish this thing up? I mean, are they going to go in on an 18-game win streak? Like, what are they going to go in on? So it's startling to me. It is startling to me. But when you look back at it, you're like, well, Arenado's really good. Goldschmidt's really good. Molina's a great veteran. Tyler O'Neill's hitting the snot out of the ball. And their bullpen's kind of figured it out.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think
it's
you can see
shocker,
that,
though.
You know, working with Molina has clearly helped John Lester You know, he, yep. Molina, you could see the response the other day when Lester won his 200th game and the way that he, you know, greeted Molina, how he certainly has been helped out by that situation. I said on the podcast a couple times this week, Carl, that there are times when we will hear from athletes when we get to, you know, a championship round, nobody believed in us. And most of the time when athletes say that stuff, we all kind of roll our eyes a little bit if you work in the industry. But the Cardinals are fully entitled to say that because I absolutely had no thought 3 weeks ago that they would be making the playoffs.
Nope, I'm guilty. And look, the Giants are going to say the same thing, and the Red Sox will say the same thing. Because there's always been this feeling that the Dodgers are going to overtake the Giants, and they still might. But that's very dismissive of a Giant team where the collective sum of the parts has been better than the great individual parts of the Dodgers. They have been. The sum has been greater than the parts of the Dodgers. And there have been a lot of folks, myself included, who've dismissed the sort of sum relative to the individuals, you know, that the Dodgers have. And I've been proven wrong.
So the last 44 games for Juan Soto, August 5th through last night, 44 games, he has 54 hits, 55 walks, 20 strikeouts, 55 walks, right. 20 strikeouts in the last 44 games. He's hitting 400 in that time, Carl, with a 572 on base percentage. Two homers yesterday, goes 3-for-3, draws a walk. You know, 5 days ago, I was ready to call off the National League MVP conversation, just give it to Bryce Harper. Good Lord, Juan Soto is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've had sort of flavors of months, and Tatis was that guy, obviously, early in the season, and the NL MVP was over. I know he won't get it, but and because of the team he plays on, like I've fallen into the Max Scherzer Cy Young, Max Scherzer MVP. We're seeing something we've never seen from a pitcher before. And now we're seeing Juan Soto tap us on the shoulder and say, hold on a second. Let's not forget about me and how I've been so good. And here I am again. So yeah, it's been crazy. I don't know, Buster, how I would, if I had a vote MVP with regards to Harper, with regards to Scherzer, with regards to Soto, with regards to Tatis. It's a really fascinating race, and it's partly because none of them, and I don't mean them, but nobody has grabbed the MVP race. And similarly in the American League, Otani had grabbed it and owned it, and that kind of changed here down the stretch. Look, Soto took that home run derby and seemingly has just exploded in the second half, which I hope gives Nationals fans, you know, reason for optimism moving forward. Like, we have that guy. He's so young. We're going to be okay. This year was terrible. We traded everybody, but we're going to be okay.
Yeah, he reminds me, just having spent some time with him and watching him go through pregame workouts, he reminds me so much of Tony Gwynn and how precise he is about his regimen. But here's one difference between the two. He hits for power at a younger age.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why, you know, we always make the comparisons to one of Tony Gwynn's good friends with Juan Soto, and that is Ted Williams. First 455 games of Juan Soto's career, his numbers are almost identical to those of Ted Williams. Soto, 98 homers, 359 walks. Ted Williams, 96 homers, 367 walks. And Carl, I think Ted Williams, if he were alive, he'd be the first one to tell you, you know what, the pitching that Juan Soto faces isn't even close. And the idea that you have a guy in a quarter of a baseball season almost have a 3-to-1 walk to strikeout ratio, not strikeout to walk, walk to strikeout ratio is insane in 2021.
Yeah, Buster, look, all the numbers are great. The Ted Williams comparison is great. What has always struck me about Juan Soto in speaking with him or in just watching him, but more so speaking with him, the maturation. A lot of people looked at the postseason a couple of years ago when he was doing his gyrations, but still was able to perform as almost like an act that's kind of arrived. We'll get to watch it, and then we're going to dismiss it. It's not an act, and there is a maturity about him which is remarkable. His patience, his dedication to the craft. I guess if I were to look at Tony Gwynn, you mentioned, and Ted Williams, and Wade Boggs is another one. you know, and they all hit predominantly from the left side. He has this craft that he wants to master, and he's not going to be satisfied as a young 20-year-old. I don't think. I think he recognizes what he's capable of, and rather than just rest on it, he's shown in the first few years this desire to keep getting better. If you're swinging at good pitches, if you're disciplined, if you have the power, if you have his legs, which he has, and he gets down into them, he's going to be good for a long time. He has shown through his words and his actions he wants to be historically great, and that's where those guys that you mentioned to me, I continue the comparison. It's wonderful because he's also he embraced it. Look, the dude loves baseball. That can see, and that's what I mean. I love that about him. Loves it.
We got 90 seconds left. I want to ask you about this. Major League Baseball is experimenting with pre-tack baseballs at some AAA games during the last stretch of the minor league season.
Yeah.
This, according to confirmation from MLB, after a story was reported by Baseball America. Carl, I cannot believe for how long this conversation has been going on about the surface of the baseball that we actually don't have something that everyone's agreed to. Like, that's amazing to me. So they're trying this thing. We're obviously going to have a conversation in the offseason about sticky substance. I'm not going to use the pitcher's name, but because I don't think it's fair. I don't want to single him out. But I've seen a superstar pitcher in recent weeks, basically when he works during the game, it's like he's unloading his saliva glands on every ball he gets. which, by the way, as I've had coaches and managers point out to me, is illegal. But because everyone is trying to find the right feel on the baseball, they're all looking the other way. I've seen pitchers in recent weeks. I think it's pretty clear they're using some kind of a sunscreen because they're doing that forearm thing that we saw for a few years. Everyone trying to find some kind of a feel on the baseball. How did we get to this point?
Well, we got to this point because of the inability of two sides to figure out what to do. And it seems quite clear Major League Baseball is committed to introducing a new baseball next year, and one that they're going to design. I know Eduardo Perez talks often about coming back from the Olympics and saying they have it already. It exists. We could use that one. And that's not going to happen. There may be one exactly like it, but they're not using that one. I think it's fairly obvious to see some of the guys who were using substances that aren't using it anymore, whether they're not throwing fastballs up in the zone, whether they can't land a curveball that they were consistently landing. All of those things are fairly evident. And the notion that we have put ourselves in a position to go into the most important part of any season, the postseason, and not have equipment that the sides, both pitcher and hitter, are comfortable with, is a black eye, you know, for baseball. That doesn't make any sense. It would be like taking away, I'm watching the Ryder Cup, taking away drivers and saying we can't figure out which driver to use, so we're not going to use anyone but this one model, and everybody's going to use the same one. It flies in the face of competitive nature. It's frustrating, and it's unfortunately fairly typical for baseball, which stinks.
Yeah, and they're flirting with chaos, because I tell you what, if a team faces this particular superstar pitcher in the postseason, the manager could completely change everything, the opposing manager, by coming out and saying, he's not allowed to go to his mouth, umpires. Want you to check on him.
Yep.
All right,
yep.
Carl, thanks for doing this. Stay dry tonight.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, ToddRadom.com. Todd, how are you doing this week?
Buster, we've got pennant races. It's late September. All is well with the world, my friend.
So I said earlier in the week, I wanted to see if you agree with me. I feel like that a lot of times when we get to end of September, we get into October, and it becomes a refrain among teams that when they win championships, no one believed in us. For me, the 2021 St. Louis Cardinals might be actually a team that can say that and be correct. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they can lay a claim to that without any question. Streaking all over the place. What did I see yesterday? Their percentage chances of winning several weeks ago, but basically nothing. Now they're a virtual lock to get in. And a dangerous team for sure. And St. Louis has to be loving it.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And, as I said earlier in the week, when the players stand up on the podium and they say that no one believed in us, then we should just sit back and go, yep, you're 100% right. All right. Before we get to this week's quiz, let's talk about this week's forgotten franchise.
Buster, this week we are going to take a look at a one-year wonder, the Indianapolis Blues, who played in the National League way back in 1878, the league's third season. The Blues were formed in 1876 as an independent club called the Indianapolis Westerns. They won the International Association pennant a year later, and their success spurred the NL to admit them to their fold a year after that. In 1878, the National League consisted of only six teams, and they played a short 60-game schedule, the same length as last year's abbreviated pandemic season. The Blues played their home contests at South Street Park, located on the northeast corner of Delaware and South Streets, close by the current site of Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The Blues opened up their schedule at home on May 1st against the Chicago White Stockings. These are today's Cubs, on a warm, cloudy day in front of 1,200 fans. Chicago, however, spoiled the festivities, winning the game by a score of 5-4. The Blues' top pitcher was rookie Edward Sylvester Nolan, a.k.a. the only Nolan. He was suspended from the team twice during the 1878 season and later blacklisted from the league for various transgressions, including suspicions of throwing games. He was later cleared. And for bolting the club in August to attend the funeral of his brother in New Jersey. Well, one problem was that he had no brother. The other was that he actually remained in Indy, with the Indianapolis Journal reporting that Nolan, quote, owed his downfall to the fascinations of a beautiful habitué of an Avenue assignation house who has ruined more men in the city than she can count on the jeweled fingers of both hands. Why don't we write like that anymore, Buster? Nolan was later reinstated. He played for several different clubs and later became a police officer in Paterson, New Jersey, rising through the ranks and eventually attaining the position of sergeant. Another rookie, third baseman Ned Williamson, would enjoy a stellar career. He belted 27 home runs for Chicago in 1884, which remained the single season record until a guy named Babe Ruth hit 29 in 1919. The Blues' final game took place at Boston on September 14th, 1878. A 4-0 win for Indy, played in a crisp 1 hour and 40 minutes. Battered by economic headwinds, the club finished the year $2,500 in debt, and they resigned from the National League on December 4th, 1878. They were replaced by another club that took the Blues nickname, Cleveland, who joined the NL along with teams from Syracuse and Buffalo. Indianapolis, however, would get a new National League team in 1887, the Hoosiers, who we discussed on May 21st. But this week, Buster, the one and done 1878 Indianapolis Blues are our forgotten franchise.
All right, lots of questions, and I have to sort through them and pare them down. The first natural one would be, how is it that a franchise, and this is an open-ended question, this is not meant to be a rhetorical question, how does a franchise in Indianapolis wind up with the nickname the Blues? Any feel on that?
I don't think they gave a lot of thought to it, Buster. I think it was the color of their socks, and that was it.
Okay. And forgive me for having grown up in a town of 400 people in the middle of Vermont. I think I can guess what an assignation house is. Can you educate me on that a little bit more? Because I'm fascinated by that.
Well, this is a family podcast, Buster. We have impressionable listeners. And maybe what we need to do is kind of cloak this in a little mystery and say that some ill repute was involved. Some things that, you know, some things that you and I would not get up to on the road, but others might. Some interests might be there, but we would never bolt our club, especially lying about the death of an alleged brother.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that's what I thought when I saw that, and it was beautifully written there.
Oh, this is Shakespearean prose. I mean, you know, you just unbelievable. Absolutely. One thing that strikes me, Buster, also is we did discuss the Indianapolis Hoosiers a couple of months ago.
Yeah,
and Indianapolis, home to the Colts, a great sports tradition, home to the NCAA, has not had a Major League Baseball franchise since then. And I know they were in on potential expansion in the 80s, but they have a geographic conundrum being as close as they are to Chicago and Cincinnati and a city that will probably, you know, one would imagine never get an MLB franchise regardless of the appeal, right?
No, I don't think so. I did, you know, when I was covering the Nashville Sounds back in 1989 and 90, I'd go up and see games in Indianapolis, the Indianapolis Indians, the great Howard Kellman, play-by-play man for that team. But my distinct memory is that the PA announcer there, they had a player on the team, and the PA announcer had so much fun with his name. And I'm not going to do it justice here, but it was Razor Shines.
Oh, when excellent.
You bring him up to the plate. That was a lot of fun.
Expos farm team, and I designed the final season logo for Busch Stadium, B-U-S-H, which I believe was back in 1995, a long time ago.
Well, all right. Let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, guys. I was in Cooperstown this past weekend, so a bolt of lightning hit me on the head. Derek Jeter, born in 1974, is one of the seven Baseball Hall of Famers who were born in the 1970s. Which Hall of Famer among the following was not born during that decade? Was it Chipper Jones, Jim Tomei, Mariano Rivera, or Pedro Martinez? Not born in the 70s like Derek Jeter. Chipper Jones, Jim Tomei, Mariano Rivera, or Pedro Martinez?
Wow. Oh, my goodness. All right. What do you got, Taylor?
Let me think about this one for a second. I think I'm going to go Jim Tomei.
Yeah, I thought about going Jim Tomei, but I'm going to overthink it again. I'm going to go Pedro Martinez.
You're both wrong. It was Mariano Rivera. Just missed out. He was born on November 29th, 1969. Pedro born in 1971, Jim Tomei in 1970, and Chipper Jones, by the way, in 1972. So you both lose.
Yeah, and I should have had taken a better shot at that, because of course the great trajectory of Mariano's career. He was, you know, sort of viewed as a middling starting pitcher in the Yankees farm system. He had a significant shoulder injury, and then he was called up in the spring of 95. The White Sox players talk about having gotten a scouting report saying, yeah, his stuff is mediocre. And this guy comes out firing, and they're all looking at each other going, hey, what the heck? In terms of scouting report. And the other great story, Gene Michael told me this story about Mariano Rivera in the spring of 95. They're actually talking to other teams about a starting pitcher, and they had a deal arranged, the concept of a deal arranged, David Wells for Mariano Rivera. And Gene Michael got a scouting report from a Yankees AAA game from the night before in which Rivera pitched. And they said radar gun readings 95-96 rather than 90-92. And Gene Michael called down, he told me, and like yelled at the people on the field staff and said, what are you doing? Your radar gun is messed up. And they're like, no, seriously, that's how hard he was throwing. And then he called a scout with another team and asked him, hey, what did you have Rivera at last night? 95, 96 miles per hour. And he called off the David Wells trade conversations.
Good move. And eventually they had both. And guys, I just have to say, again, having been in Cooperstown last weekend, how fitting is it that the plaques of Marion Rivera and Derek Jeter are adjacent to one another for all eternity, right next to each other?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's pretty neat. I love the picture of Derek standing in front of that when he was inducted.
Absolutely.
All right, Todd, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much, guys.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a glorious Friday. Andrew, I'm not going to mess around with the last name, but Andrew writes in, the Orioles are routinely regarded as being terrible and or an embarrassment this season, but the Diamondbacks have the same record. Why don't the D-backs get the same treatment? Can we bag on the D-backs for a second here, Buster?
Andrew, the context is completely different. It's apples and oranges. 2017, Arizona won 93 games. 2018, 82 wins. 2019, 85 wins. They've clearly made moves to try to win, including signing Madison Bumgarner. Now, they are in a retooling period. Mike Hazen, their general manager, spoke with reporters yesterday. He said he's going to talk more at the end of the regular season about what the direction of the team is. They have a massive challenge in the National League West with the Giants being as good as they are, the Dodgers being as good as they are, but they've been trying. The Orioles' future payroll obligations, I was looking this up, Taylor, to this morning. In 2022, for the next year's team, this is what the Orioles' future payroll obligation is. $0. Not a nickel. There's no indication yet that they're going to spend anything more than they have to for next year. They do have some deferred money owed to Chris Davis moving forward, who has retired. It's not even close.
Wow. Okay. I guess we'll move on from bagging to the D-backs for a second. Let's go to
Sue. You agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a joke. It's obvious. I mean, the Madison Bumgarner signing alone shows that they're serious about at least trying. I did not know that about them having no payroll obligations for next season, which is woefully depressing. So let's move on. Superb Owl at Superb Owl Owl writes in, Cedric Mullins is just one home run away from a 30-30 season. Where do you see him ranking in the MVP voting, or will playing on the last place Orioles hinder his chances of placing in the top three? I feel like there's no chance of him placing the top three. What do you think?
No, not top three. I do think he's going to get some top 10 votes, maybe 8, 9, 10, somewhere in that range. But 1, 2, and 3, I think those are pretty much locked in at this point. You're going to have Ohtani. You're going to have Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and you're going to have Salvador Perez. Salvador Perez, who's a regular on the show now.
Salvi, this is a Royals podcast after all. Eric Bobby writes in, at Bet the Family Farm, hey, Buster, the expression heads will roll is going to fit this organization the most. Padres, Twins, Yankees, or Mets?
Padres. Look, they're going to be some cheap. If the Yankees don't make the playoffs, we talked about the possibility Aaron Boone could get let go. I do think the Mets are going to change their manager. There's going to be a shakeup in the front office because of all the stuff that we've seen this year. But I think the Padres are going to have the most significant change.
Last one for the week. Louisville Slugger at Ville underscore Slugger 6 writes in the once upon a time 30 for 30. Keith Hernandez's leadership really stood out during your time covering the game. Who were some of the other true leaders on the field? And hey, Louisville Slugger, thanks for bringing up Once Upon a Time in Queens. You can watch that on ESPN Plus or the ESPN app if you did not know already.
I think CC Sabathia was a great leader. Michael Young of the Texas Rangers was someone who was really respected. Yadi Molina is someone who I think has been a great leader within their clubhouse. There are a lot of players. You know, every team, you've got guys. Keith Hernandez was excellent. He, to me, was more of a, the type of leader that, when I covered the Yankees in the late 90s, David Cone was that guy, like the older guy who would sort of school the younger players on how to handle certain things. It's pretty clear Keith Hernandez had that that role on those Mets teams.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter as you're watching the games over the weekend. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Carl, Todd, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. the Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.